Brother Glenn and I have been kind of tabbed for the last one in this series that we're doing on Sunday night. And we have basically two things we're going to touch on a little bit. Conversations in mature marriages and keeping one another encouraged. Brother Glenn, I think, is going to cover almost all of his on keeping one encouraged. One another encouraged. So I personally am going to deal a lot with conversations in mature marriages, but also keeping one another encouraged just a little bit. And he's going to have it more in detail. So if you have a little overlap, that's okay. We've always been told that we learn by repetition, repetition, repetition. I know that's certainly true with me. In dealing, first of all, with conversations in mature marriages, in my years of being a Christian, my years, nearly 50 years now being married, not sure how she's put up with me that long, but she has, and I appreciate that. But one of the things I've learned to do is to keep the door open to talk with each other. And let me emphasize this point, too. And listen to one another. That's always been one of my problems. I'll be honest with you. I've always been challenged in discussion to actually listen. You know, I'm so quick to put out my opinion or my view on something that I'm not paying attention, not really. So I've been really working that over the past couple of years or so. But when we talk about keeping the door open to talk with each other, listening to each other, carefully doing that, not just hearing, but listening, we need to talk about opening the door to talk with each other regardless of the subject matter. Okay? So sometimes it can get a little difficult, if you will, because There are things that we're going to say and we're going to be real. Wow, we don't want to hurt somebody's feelings. You know, even your husband or your wife, if I say this, it's going to hurt their feelings. And there is a right way and a wrong way to do that. I like what Brother Mike said this morning in his sermon. You know, sometimes it helps to kind of step back and not think you've got the only way to say something, the only way to address something. You can step back and say from this vantage point or from this vantage point over here, how do I want to approach this? Which is going to be the best way to do that? And yet at the same time, it's like a lot of things. We need to be open to be able to speak to each other, tell each other what's on our mind. So that's one of the things, and we can talk more about that maybe in a little bit. But right now, let's move to another point. I have seen a lot of problems in marriages over the years, and especially my 30 years in the pulpit, full-time working the pulpit, and certainly as an elder with this problem here, include each other in important decision-making. It's really important. We're going to talk more in detail about some of these things, but it's really important for us to discuss things before making decision that could adversely affect our relationship with each other as husband and wife, but also your entire family. We need to be thinking about those kinds of things. I've known situations where somebody, one of them, went out and made a major decision. And I'll get on you guys for this because you're probably the worst about it. We tend to be that way sometimes. Where they went out and made a major decision that would adversely affect that family. And boy, we're talking about a husband and wife now bumping heads. Why? Because she wasn't put into consideration at all. You know, and we'll talk about some other things here. Yes, it is true. Now listen carefully. 1 Corinthians 11 verse 3 says, "But I want you to know that the head of man is Christ, the head of woman is man, and the head of Christ is God." Now notice here, if you will, wrap your heads around this. Nowhere does it say, husbands, you're dictators. Okay? And I think I can prove that. If you go over the book of Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 22 and through 29, we won't take the time to really open it up and read it. But one of the things there is that we learn that wives are to be in submission to their own husbands. And I really appreciate last Wednesday night when Zach brought a lesson on that, because he made some good points that just because the man is the head of the house does not mean that somehow he's a tyrant. Does not mean that he's got his wife in bonds and chains and not allowing her any role in the family at all, if you will. Because notice what it then goes on to say. I believe it's in verse 26. Husbands, in fact, I think it says it twice. The idea of husbands, love your wives, even as Christ loved the church. Love your wives. You know one of the hallmark characteristic traits of a dictator? They don't love anybody but themselves in reality. They don't care about anybody but themselves. That's what a dictator does. So as you're stopping and thinking about this, notice what it says again, 1 Corinthians 11, verse 3. I want you to know that what? The head of man is Christ. See, even man is not, the man is not a dictator. Okay? And of course, we know in other things that Christ is the king, so actually it's a monarchy that we live under in the church. But the head of woman is man. That doesn't mean, once again, that she's to be walked all over and treated like her input isn't important. Think about this for a moment. Solomon had 700 wives and 300 concubines. Now we could spend forever and a day talking about the foolishness of that. Because sometimes we forget, you know, we really do, that I thought he was the wisest man around. Remember what he actually asked for. He asked for wisdom to lead the people. He did not make that application down the line, true, but he didn't ask for a broad scope of wisdom. Maybe if he had, God would have given him that, and he wouldn't have gotten himself into all these problems that he got into. But that's a different story right now. Now, I just have to wonder, and I ask myself, in fact, I think the other day, Mike and I were talking about it, and I said, you think about that, with 700 wives, how many real, you know, put quotation marks around that, put it in bold letters, whatever you have to do to remember that, but how many real conversations could he have possibly had with his wives? It wouldn't even be possible. So remember that and think on that. And my understanding, if I am remembering this right, even Naama, if I'm pronouncing that right, his first wife, who was the mother of Rehoboam, which would have made sense that she was his first wife, because the heirship of the kingdom would have gone through the first in line. So how could he have possibly had any real relationships and real conversations with even Naama? Now, let's add to that. Rehoboam, well, he learned a little bit, didn't he? He only had 18 wives and 60 concubines, but he didn't learn a whole lot. Okay, we learned that from 2 Chronicles 11, verse 21, I believe it is. Rehoboam could not have possibly had real discussions with his wife. He didn't even accept the advice, the wise counsel of the elders. And we're going to get on something here in just a moment, too. He didn't do that. 1 Kings chapter 12, 1 through 8. What did he do? He listened to the wise counsel of the elders, tell them to come back, or Joshua, I guess, or not Joshua, Jeroboam, and told him to come back in 3 days. Then he talked with the elders, and then he went to who? Those of his own age, and he went with that. I just wonder if he had taken the time to talk to his wife or wives at this point in time. Don't know how many at this point in time for sure. If he had just taken the time to talk to that person, at least, let's say he only had one at that point. What do you think about this? What are your thoughts on this? Folks, let's not discount the fact, men, don't discount the fact that your wife has a good mind. I mean, you know, sometimes we can look at, well, that woman, she's got a real good mind. Well, what about your wife? If you're saying she doesn't, then guess who she married? She wasn't very smart for marrying you. So let's remember that. Let's take that into consideration. I don't see anywhere in the scriptures, at least, that there's an indication that he ever talked to his wife or wives about this. He just made his own decision on this. And look what had ultimately happened to the kingdom. Once a united kingdom became a divided kingdom. Now, my short part on keeping one another encouraged. As married couples, keep your goal in plain view. What do I mean by that? Open your songbooks real quickly and turn to Psalm 684. 684. Anybody? Huh? 684. And the first one that wants to, just tell everybody what the name of that song is. The world is not my home. You know what that tells me? As a couple, you ought to be working together. You ought to want your spouse. That won't be your spouse in heaven, I understand that. But here on earth, you will want that person to be in heaven too. Keep your eye on that goal. Keep it in plain sight. And after years of being married, it ought to start coming together a little bit better. And again, keeping our eyes on that goal. Philippians 3 and verse 20 comes to my mind. Our citizenship is not here on earth. It's in heaven. There's where everything should be in our minds as a couple should be revolved around. Not only do I want to get to heaven, but I want my spouse to get to heaven. And it should be mutual feelings toward each other. Get to heaven. Here's another one very quickly. And again, we're going to have some overlapping, but I'm not spending much time on this. Show interest in each other's interests. Now, let me give you a quick example. My wife loves taking pictures. She does. She loves it. Now, she doesn't do portrait type stuff or anything like that. She likes to take pictures of flowers and windmills and landscapes and all that kind of stuff. And you know, I'm good for pictures, but one or two and I'm ready to go. She likes to take them, and she likes to, to the point where, not just a phone anymore. A digital, you know, camera. And she's learning how to use that. And it's looking, I mean, she's getting better every day with it. It's not necessarily my cup of tea, but you know what? I need to take interest in some of those things. And if you don't think she does not like to take pictures of landscapes and stuff like that, ask Ryan. He downloaded stuff onto an external hard drive, and I made thousands of pictures, and that's not a joke. Okay, she loves to take pictures. I need to show some interest in that. I need to show interest that her interests are important to me. Encourage, and this is not the first time you've heard this in this series, encourage quiet time of study and reading God's Word. 2 Timothy 2:15, study, the King James Version renders that, or give diligent, be diligent. Study to show yourself approved unto God, a workman that does not need to be ashamed, but rightly handling or dividing the word of truth. Add to that 1 Timothy 4 and verse 13, Paul actually tells Timothy, give attention, pay attention to reading. And after having done that, give that quiet time between yourselves to do that, but be open to discussion of what you are reading or studying. Just open it up. Or, you know, sometimes we may not even be reading the exact same thing at the same time. And I'll stop and say, whenever you get a chance, I want to say something. I want to show you something. Find a good place to stop. And if she finds a good place to stop, I said, man, have you ever noticed that in like Acts chapter whatever? Have you ever noticed that? You know? And she can have some input. Yeah, I have noticed that. Or, no, thanks for showing that to me. And the same thing is true with me. She may stop in the middle and she says, when you get a good stopping place with what you're doing, do the same thing. All right, I got a good stopping place. And she'll ask a question or she'll point something out. And I'm going, no, I had never noticed that either. In fact, sometimes she asks a question, I'm going to have to work on that one. Like Mike said, I'm going to have to think about that a little bit. I don't have an answer for that right off the top of my head. And so encourage that quiet time and be open to that discussion. And final thing that I'm going to say right now before we get to any kind of Q&A, if we have time for that, and I think we will, you've heard this before. I think everybody has heard this before. Young people, whether you're married yet, contemplating marriage, or you are married, okay, think about this. Marriage is not 50-50 at all. It's not that's not the kind of relationship it is. When you go into a marriage, you need to have a mindset. Both of you need to have a mindset. I'm going to put in 100% of myself. And if you both do that, some of you might get lucky enough and work hard enough that your marriage can last, like some of the folks around here, 60 plus years already. So just a few thoughts. And again, we'll turn it over to Glenn now and let him with his part, and then we'll kind of open things up.
Thank you, Royce. I will be hitting on some of the points that Royce brought up. I like to start off by reading, good marriages just don't happen by accident or by chance. They are made just like anything else. That's through hard work, and hard work is the price we'll have to pay to achieve this goal. In Ephesians chapter 5, verse 22 through 32, Paul sets about to help us accomplish this goal by reminding us of the loving and affectionate relationship exists between Christ and His church. The church is unquestionably the bride of Christ, 2 Corinthians chapter 11, verse 2. And because of this, she is due all the care and attention that a loving husband would provide. Likewise, the groom is worthy of respect and honor extended by the bride. When both husband and wives are living in harmony with the attitude that Christ had towards His bride, the church, the marriage, will enjoy harmony in the relationship. In Genesis chapter 2, verses 18 through 20, we learn of a woman being created as a helpmate to complement her husband. She became the completion of his life. And as the church is subject unto Christ in Ephesians chapter 5, verse 24, so wives are to be in submission to their own husband. The husband is to treat his wife with dignity and respect and to love her sacrificially as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for it. And that's a whole lot of love. Husband and wives both have needs that are unique to themselves, and the amount of satisfaction that one experiences in marriages is directly related to the fulfillment of these needs. Brother Cary Knight had this to say about the needs of husbands and wives. The male of the species seems to have a greater need for identity. He needs to feel important, successful, and accomplished. Self-esteem is an important part of a man's emotional health. Wives who take the time to compliment their husband for their hard work, long hours, and career advancement are wise. Now, wives, on the other hand, have a greater need for intimacy. They need to be shown love and tenderness. They need to be held and told they are beautiful. Husbands should never be too busy to pay attention to the basic needs of the wife of his youth. In Proverbs chapter 5, verse 18, the Bible reads, "Let the fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of thy youth." Husband and wives should always have a sensitive and caring love for one another, recognizing the need of one another to whom their love is pledged. The very foundation for this kind of love begins with a good knowledge of and respect of the Word of God, as it is more powerful than any two-edged sword, Hebrews chapter 4, verse 12. And in Joshua chapter 1, verse 8, the Bible reads, "This book of the law shall not depart out of thy mouth, but thou shalt meditate there day and night, that thou mayest observe to do according to all that is written therein. For then thou shalt make thy way prosperous, and then thou shalt have good success." Also in Psalms chapter 1, verse 1 and 2, we read, "Blessed is the man that walketh not in the counsel of the ungodly, nor standeth in the way of sinners, nor sitteth in the seat of the scornful, but his delight is in the law of the Lord, and in his law does he meditate day and night." If husband and wives would look to God and his word for daily guidance, so many potential problems would be bypassed. The book of Ephesians provides a wonderful pattern for a complete marriage. Let us all look to the powerful word for this counsel. As Roy said, 2 Timothy 2:15 and 2 Timothy 3:16 and 17. So as husband and wives, how do we keep one encouraged? Number one, by studying God's Word together. Deb and I love to read the entire Bible together each year. We usually follow a yearly Bible reading schedule and then discuss what we have read together. This is very uplifting and encouraging to us both. We also take time to be together, just the two of us, doing something we enjoy, such as hiking, rock hounding, exploring caves, fossil hunting, metal detecting, etc. We've even gone fishing a few times together, and I could tell you a few stories about that. Couples need to spend time together and remain best friends. Deb and I have always worked hard at remaining best friends and spending time together, even though my work demanded that I be out of town very often. We also have separate interests as well. But the bulk of our time has always been spent doing something together. Our main focus has always been to please God and maintain a deep respect for His Word and His authority. Our lives has always been centered around the goal. In Luke chapter 6, verse 46, the Bible reads, "And why call ye me Lord, Lord, and do not the things which I say?" One very important example of encouraging one another is our faithfulness in attending every service of the Lord's assembly. One of the greatest encouragements that Deb ever gave me was her dedication to attending all the services of the Lord with Brian and his brother Matt, even when we only had one vehicle and she would have to call a ride for church. There were many times I would be out worshiping with the brethren in Texarkana or Longview, Texas. Brethren, it could be difficult sometimes, but there's one thing that Deb and I would not do was forsake that assembly. As one good brother will always say, "To God be the glory." I came across an article that was printed in a church bulletin from the Talladega Church of Christ in Alabama. Dylan and Patty Bays, members of this particular congregation, had entered and won the Happy Marriage Contest of June of 1996 in the Good Housekeeping magazine. They came in first out of 12,000 entries. They said the secret to their 27-year marriage is this: we gave when we wanted to receive. We served when we wanted to feast. We listened when we wanted to talk. We submitted when we wanted to reign. We forgave when we wanted to remember. We stayed when we wanted to leave. Let me just end by encouraging all of us to remember that the whole duty of man is to fear God and keep His commandments, Ecclesiastes 12, verse 13. If we do this, we will be encouragement to each other in our marriages, and it will be well with our souls. Thank you.
Okay, we're going to kind of open things up for some questions, and we'll try to answer them. I wanted to make a quick comment. I told you we'd be talking about a little few extra things here that I had left out almost intentionally. Wish I hadn't now. We have plenty of time, so gather your questions and we'll deal with them. It doesn't make any difference how old you are. And I was thinking about this Solomon's day and age, Rehoboam's day and age. It doesn't make any difference how old you are. You can probably find somebody a little older than you and seek that wisdom from them. Look for that. Mike and I have talked about that before. Mike is younger than I am by about 20 years. But even at my age, I can find people that I look to and go, you know what? I can ask that person some questions and glean information and use some of the wisdom that they can impart. Don't be afraid to ask older folks. You'd be surprised how much you can get from them. One of the things, and I'm not going to call a name, though I'd like to. One of our younger members here, I see her all the time talking to some of our older members and sometimes just older visitors. She doesn't have a problem with doing that. Something tells me that somewhere down the line, she learned that from her parents. Don't be afraid to ask questions of older folks. They have a lot of wisdom imparted to them. And if you don't do it now, you may wake up one of these days and they're gone. And you won't be able to get that wisdom from them. Any questions? Yes, Josh.
I know we're, this is in the context of marriage.
Yes.
But, of course, where I'm asking from, I'm not married.
That's fine.
You made the statement talking to each other regardless of the subject matter.
Yes.
And I was just wondering, does that begin, like, in the courtship kind of realm, or
No, I think, you know, I think that's a very good question. If you didn't hear it, in the process of maybe, that's kind of an unusual term nowadays, courtship. A lot of people don't, that's a great one though, honestly. It's a good one. But a lot of people think that, well, everything starts the day that you are about to get married. You know, now we start doing things. No, there is a time to be asking questions and growing in those questions, if you will. You don't necessarily start out as your first going out with somebody, and my terminology is probably bad nowadays, going out with somebody, dating somebody. I remember Amelia saying, that's not how we say that now. Oh, okay. But that's okay, too. I'm 72 years old. She's not. So here a 72-year-old can learn from her. But, you know, you don't automatically, first time you go on a first date or whatever you call these things now, just going out with each other or whatever, you don't necessarily delve into the deeper stuff right then, but that's the time that you begin to understand and talk to each other and open the door up for honest discussions about things, you know. I think it was Leon that said this morning, the first thing in class, he says, you don't ask somebody on the first date to marry him. You know, trust me, I did. No, I didn't. Tony looked at me and said, what's wrong with you? And I said, too many things to discuss right now. But, I tried to have a sense of humor too about this. But, of course, I didn't do that, honestly. But you don't, you gradually work into things. And the more you see each other, the more you go out and do things together, the more you begin to learn about each other. That's where you start putting some of those things together. And down the line, I want to talk about this, and maybe not tonight, maybe not today, not on this time, but down the line, we'll talk about some of these things. And at the appropriate time, you begin to discuss things. But that's an excellent question, Josh. Don't wait until after you're married. Oh, I've been wanting to kind of ask you about some things. I've been wanting to talk to you about some things. No. Yes?
Well, I add to this question, because I don't know. I know that I was taught at home that, you know, you marry who you date, so take dating serious. It's not. So I was thinking about the question. But when y'all were both dating, or you met your spouse before you got married, were you thinking marriage, and were you thinking conversations then in that direction? Make your conversations more objective.
I'm going to let Glenn answer first, then I'll.
My wife wasn't a Christian at the time, but I know she wasn't going to marry another Christian.
Okay.
Yeah, that was a pretty unique situation there, because I don't really care to go into the long story. When I met my wife, Deborah Bryan's mother, at that time I was living in Arkansas, and she was actually a Big Spring girl, and I didn't even know who she was, really, and I had a mutual friend in Arkansas who introduced me to her. Then when we met, she had to go back to West Texas, and I stayed in Arkansas. We started writing letters together. And I'll be honest about it, we learned a lot from just writing letters together, the interest we took. Now, like Brian said, I was not a Christian, but I was like Cornelius. I was really searching and studying in the providence of God. She came back to town to Arkansas to visit grandparents. And she said, like she said, I can't marry but a Christian. And so she started studying with me with another couple. And, of course, the lights just lit up. The more I studied with her, it just grew. But like another interest I'd like to say, on young marriage couples, I beg and please seek counseling. Memorize Ephesians chapter 5. Because when I went into marriage, I didn't really understand what marriage was all about. Debbie and I have really grown in our marriage together. There's a lot of things. Like I said, I mentioned this before. I was a railroad through freight conductor, and I was gone out of town, say, for 41 years. And we'd be married in August the 20th, Lord willing, 52 years. So I've been out of town a lot, but when I came to town, we wanted to be together so much. And so love really, it just grows and grows, and you never get too old for loving one another. So interest one another.
Okay. What Glenn will tell you, and he didn't hear, is that he was baptized, and was it the next day or that day he got married? Okay.
Terry playing that Sunday on her birthday.
Okay. Now he knows how to remember the anniversary and the birthday. If he doesn't, he's got two of them wrong. He's in trouble. But, you know, I had not been a Christian very long, maybe about 3 years, when we got married. But when we started dating, I hadn't been a Christian very long. But I did know one thing. And it doesn't mean I did everything right. She did everything right. I'm just saying I knew one thing, because I'd been down that road of dating people that had no spirituality at all, no want to, no, that I wanted to date somebody. I had never done that before. I'd never dated anybody that was a Christian before. So it was helpful to have a mindset and an attitude of, you know, date a Christian, and again, that does not guarantee everything's going to work out perfectly. It doesn't. I've seen too many cases where it did not, but I would say the vast majority do. So, for what that's worth, yeah, I would just definitely say, you know, have in mind the idea that who you're wanting to date, and the person that you end up marrying can have a major impact on your eternal salvation. Going to help you get there or not? So I hope that answered the question, Brian.
Well, I didn't know that y'all wrote letters. I was kind of interested in before texting. If I remember correctly, my flood was probably, 13 hours away from Big Spring, 14 hours.
Which one of you kept your letters? None of you? Neither one of you? No. Well, that's okay. You know, it still worked out. It still happened. Okay. Yes, Evelyn.
So my question is more for the aging in a marriage. What would you suggest for when illnesses set in, or when the aging process causes for the interest that you do together to slow down because y'all not able to do those things? What is that transition like, and how does that communication change?
Okay. You know, the aging process, we all need to accept the fact that we're not going to be young forever. Interestingly enough, that the way you asked that question, Sister Carolyn Hood, when she is back behind us over here in rehab and all that before she got to go home, we were talking about a lot of her ailments that were going on right then. Of course, her husband's since passed away, but she made a very simple statement. God never intended for our bodies to last forever. And so I really got to thinking about that, because she is a few years older than I am. Okay, I don't know what her age actually is. That's not of importance to me. I know she is older than I am. And so that's a good question about that. As long as you, I'd say as long as you have your spouse there, maybe some of your interests are going to have to change. You can't do that. Glenn was talking about, you know, going hiking and exploring caves and whatever, that kind of thing and all that. Well, there is going to come a time when maybe, you know, you're just not going to be able to do that anymore. The physical limitations are going to kick in. Here's where I would think that you begin also to, number one, rely on some of your memories that you had when you were able to do all those things. And maybe don't, at that age, don't be afraid to change your interests a little bit. Find something else that will interest the two of you and that you can do together. And it may not, you may not think right now, well, I don't have to worry about that today. Well, somewhere down the line, Evelyn, you may have to worry about that. And so we do need to think in down the line. We need to be proactive in what we do and how we think. I hope that answers your question from my perspective.
I was thinking about that when Debbie was first diagnosed with cancer in 1996. It really hit this family hard, especially Brian and myself and his brother Matt, taking the Bible seriously. And I think Psalm, this always came to my mind, I don't know why, I went to Psalm 119, 67. Before I was afflicted, I went astray, but now I have kept thy word. Then verse 71, it is good for me that I have been afflicted, that I might learn thy statutes. Well, when she was hit with the cancer, of course, everything came out good. It really got us to studying the Bible together. Hiking, I brought up, Deb and I used to hike. She always liked to say, well, we hiked 11 miles one day. I said, honey, that was back in so-and-so time. Now, I sit there and look at the house, and I look at these photos of beautiful Arkansas. I still miss my Arkansas Buffalo River and hiking trip. I said, boy, those were grand days. But now it's like she and I, she's having a good day, we're having a good day. We're like just maybe get in a car and go sightseeing. We went to Llano, Texas, went down and had a beautiful trip. Just, we didn't have to walk far, went out to the cemetery. So we make do what we can do with our body, because, you know. So that's just, but the thing, what I said in mind, being together, doing things together. I remember I had an old gospel preacher say one time, his wife was in bad health. He said, I'll take her any way I can keep her. I just want to keep her right now. Of course, in his mind, he said, he has a better place for her, but if, Lord, if you're merciful, please keep her for me, just having that companionship, be together.
But Glenn, what I heard you say there is kind of echoing what I said. You know, as you age, you get older and all that, your limitations kick in on some things. You know what you do? You find other things to do. Maybe you can't go hiking that 11 miles in one day, but you can get in the car and you can make a trip to Fredericksburg or Llano and go into like antique shops or whatever and just browse around and all that kind of stuff. Those are still available to you. You might not have done that 15, 20 years ago. You know, no, I'm more active. I want to get out there and do this and that. But now, that's a new way to enjoy each other and time together. Yes?
So how do you incorporate grandchildren into your mature marriages?
Well, that's a good one. How do you incorporate grandchildren into a mature marriage? We try, I know we do, we try to see our grandchildren as much as we can. Now, they're all down in the Austin area, a little difficult sometimes to do that. You've got one over in Bryan College Station, and so they're kind of getting spread out a little bit. It's a little bit difficult to do. But what I have done just recently, and this is with the advent of some of our technology we have now. We have a family devotional time. And every Monday, I bring something. And we have not only included my children, but now some of the grandchildren involved in that. They get the same thing that my children get. Now, my devotional that I put out. And every now and then, I do. I get this little heart on that. And what? From one of the grandchildren. And that's a good thing to do. It's not always an easy thing because we don't live, and I'm kind of dating myself a little bit here, but we don't live in the Waltons era. If you knew that TV show, The Waltons, where you had grandma and grandpa and mom and dad and a whole host of kids in one house. We live in such a mobile society today, it's harder to do. But I would just say this, even when you are apart, try to stay in touch. Try to make sure that not only your kids know that you're thinking about them, but your grandkids are also involved as much as you can to be with you.
Yeah, I believe the greatest thing is showing interest in what they enjoy doing. Unfortunately, Danielle's with us now. I've got him more be involved with her. And of course, I grew up the athlete. I like sporting the bench. I got to see her play softball, and it's been an encouragement seeing her. Got to see Jaden a little bit. The other two grandchildren in Arkansas, don't get to see them very often, but I try to keep just once in a while text them, just let them know, hey, how's it going? Mainly the interest is on their faithfulness in church. That is the greatest emphasis. We're very blessed. With five grandchildren, all have five obeyed the gospel and strong in the faith. That's the only thing I pray to my Lord is that they stay faithful in the Lord. And then when I'm around them, I want to let that light come out of me and say, boy, their papa, boy, he loves that Bible. His Nana loves to talk about it. Main thing is what we center around is talking about the scriptures. In fact, when we were in Arkansas spring break, our Emily, she had some kind of last leader of what they were going through. And she came upstairs and was studying Romans with us. And we were just so impressed with the knowledge she had gained. So that's the best thing. It was texting, you know, this is all new to me, all this new technology, but you can stay in contact with those grandkids and let them know they're special in their lives. So, and thankful to godly, faithful, godly sons and daughter-in-laws.
You got Cassie back there? Yeah.
Continue that interest with them so that they're still getting the joy from that. As far as from a grandchild perspective, being so close to my grandmother, she was very good, and my mom was and dad were very good about making sure us and young children got special quality time with my grandparents. And they lived in Florida, they lived in East Texas, so it's a good 12-hour drive. But family time was always very important.
Yeah. You know, that's you brought up a good point there because sometimes you are blessed, children are blessed to have their grandparents for a long time. Sometimes they're not. I lost three of mine. One of them I don't even remember. Like I was a baby when he passed away. My other grandfather on my mother's side was in a tractor accident and was paralyzed. Well, they didn't have anything to do for him. I remember sitting on the edge. They had a hospital bed in his room at their house. And I remember sitting on the edge of his bed and vaguely doing this because I was maybe 5 years old when he died. So I didn't have a lot there. My other, that grandmother on that side got Alzheimer's dementia. Pretty early on, and she passed away early. I did have on my mother's or my dad's side my grandmother, and I got to go there on a regular basis on weeks at a time. I'll say, get it out in a minute. During the summer months, my cousin and I would go there all the time, and you know my grandma Williamson, she knew how to spoil you, but I'm gonna tell you something. You better not get on her bad side either because she had a switch she'd get after you with. So, those are things that always stick with me, you know. And then when my other cousin got old enough, he would come too. And she didn't have a problem with us being there for 2 weeks at a time. that kind of time thing is I think is kind of gone by the wayside a little bit. People get their, I hate to say it this way because I love for kids to be involved in things, but sometimes I think we get our kids so involved they don't have time for the grandparents anymore. They don't. They've got every kind of a school activity going on, and then come the summer, they've got this going on, they've got that going on, and they don't have time, and they lose precious opportunities with grandparents, and grandparents that like to spend some time with them. Oh, yes, Eric, you're too close to me.
My grandbrother had me reading the Bible when I was young, 5 years old. She lived till 93. I didn't get to show her that I could read by hearing.
Oh.
I didn't get to show her this Church of Christ that I'm going to because she passed away. She had a bladder cancer and it started to spread. That's why I'm into the Church of Christ. Is really what she told me a long time ago.
Okay.
About the one that's kept on, I kind of was like going through the wrong churches, but I was like kind of like what Lynn said, I was searching though.
You were searching.
I was trying to find them. And she told me if I do that, then you're going to end up being where you need to be, and you'd be behind for what you didn't want to be.
Okay.
So I was just going to say the grandparents, they're important. And I had mine till she was 93. She got to see my grandkids. So I'm just saying that once you find someone that knows the Bible and that age that they're still reading it, she was even reading it. She was, Jack and Ninja also came in, but not until she was 93.
Okay.
Me and her could study the Bible. I could call her and talk the Bible with her all my life.
Okay. So Eric was talking about he had a grandmother that got him interested in and involved in reading the Bible, just reading, and that can create a great bond right there. A grandparent that takes the time to sit down with somebody and young and just understand. And I think that's interesting to say if we stick it out and just keep trying and keep trying and keep searching, the problem is when do we quit searching? But I think God will give us an opportunity if we have an honest heart. Just keep at it. And a grandparent that will do that is quite an asset. She got to see you when you could read the Bible, but not by hearing it. So, okay, we're running a little short. We'll ask another. Anybody else has another question? Oh, okay. Chad.
Just looked up and a firm believer in making sure that you, like we all said, be friends with your spouse, make sure you have interest with your spouse, make sure you're doing things with your spouse, Bible studies, all that. The percentage since 1990 of what they're calling gray divorces, which is after children are out of the house, is doubled.
Mm.
They're predicting that it will triple by 2030. And that is in part due, I think, also because we focus so much on our children, which is good, but we haven't allowed enough time after focusing on our children to focus on each other in our marriage. And if you look at all the passages that y'all reference, the thing that has always been the focus has been the husband and the wife.
Yeah.
The kid would leave.
Yeah.
Natural, that's what's going to happen. And so when they're gone and that focus point is gone, you have nothing else to focus on.
Yeah.
I'm a firm believer, and that's why we're seeing such a growth in that age bracket of divorce.
Yeah. You get into that empty nester, and all of a sudden you realize you hadn't spent any time learning and growing with each other as you should have. And showing the kind of interest in each other and each other's interests and stuff, that all of a sudden everything was spent on the children, which they are important. I'll reemphasize what Chad said. That is important. But you can't forget each other. You you have that response. What happened first? You got married. Then what happened? Well, that's how it's supposed to go. You got married. And then you had children. So it was first husband, wife, then family as a whole unit. You know, so if you do that in the right order of focusing on each other and then your family and not forgetting each other, when the nest gets empty, you're equipped to handle that. James.
One thing that I constantly heard, I could not find any biblical place from it, is that men are goal-oriented. I mean, when you're dating a woman, your goal is to get the ring on the finger. And well, that's a good thing. After you get that ring on her finger, you normally will lose sight of that goal. You're not dating her anymore because you've already met the goal of getting the ring on her finger. One thing that I have found is that I'm so goal-oriented that when she just wants to listen, once she listens to her and she wants to vent, I'll sit there and I'll, you know, if you do this, you'll fix it. She doesn't want me to tell her a solution. She just wants to vent to me, and she wants to be heard.
Yep.
And on top of that, while you might have gotten married, as Chad just said, you need to date your wife. I mean, as he said, she needs to... Dating your wife, you're not going to run into that once you're in a connection that you have nothing in common. You have that time where you spend talking together about things that you like, things you might not like.
Yeah.
So that you guys, once you have that time available, you can then go out and you want to get a man and travel the world, travel the States, travel the world, whatever.
Okay. All right. I think that about takes care of our time. I appreciate everybody's input on this. I appreciate Glenn and what he was able to add to this discussion. And just keep working on it. And when you get as old as Felton, you know, you'll be happily married like he is. Only kidding, Felton. Okay. Do we have a closing prayer? Okay. James has a closing prayer.